Welcome to the Resolving Violence Podcast, created to deliver current Canadian prairie-based research on violence and abuse to service providers, people with lived experience, and the general public. I'm Jordan. And if you'd like to learn more about factors that influence violence and the ways you can address them, let's get started.
Hi, everybody. Today I'm interviewing Morgana Machea, a program manager at the Aboriginal Friendship Centres of Saskatchewan, who works within the Centre for Indigenous Women, Two-Spirit, and Gender Diversity. They are of settler descent from Pantanal, Brazil, land of the Guato, Boro, Peresi, Ibaxa, and Umatina peoples. Morgana is passionate about social justice and reconciliation and has a background in gender studies and activism. Since immigrating to Canada, Morgana has dedicated their time to learning with Indigenous peoples of Treaty 6 territory about better ways to connect and take care of one another, joining the efforts to build safer futures for all. I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, so Morgana, you're currently with the Aboriginal Friendship Centres of Saskatchewan, but you have a background in gender studies and are an MA graduate. So could you start us off with an overview on what your MA thesis was about?
Yeah, for sure. So when I did my master's, I looked at how Indigenous women in Brazil, which is the country I'm originally from, were fighting kind of the colonial capitalistic forces that were playing against them during the Bolsonaro's mandate. And so I was very interested in understanding how their activism or how their coordination was done, considering how big of a country Brazil is and how diverse the issues that were generated by the systems were regarding Indigenous folks. So yeah, it was a very interesting study.
So if I recall correctly, one of your major findings is that Indigenous women's online activisms can be seen as a way of almost reclaiming digital space by transforming colonialist technologies. So for our listeners, could you talk a little bit about what that looks like, what that actually means?
Yes, I think Indigenous women in Brazil, as Indigenous folks across the globe, have become very good at doing when they're fighting the colonial systems that are still at play, is just, you know, reclaiming those spaces, indigenizing those spaces. There are many ways to say this, and the language around that changes depending on where you are in the world. But here in Canada, we talk a lot about reconciliation. And so just accepting that even though these technologies, I remember discussing this in my thesis in the broader sense, right? Like not only computers, but also race being a technology or gender being a tool, a technology that is foreign oftentimes to Indigenous ways that, you know, Indigenous folks manage to occupy those technologies and take control back over the narratives that are now, you know, fluctuating in Western societies about what it means to be Indigenous and what it means to protect the forest or what it means to protect the children and the ecosystems and language and medicine and so many things. So it doesn't look like one specific thing, but what I saw often was just this immense flexibility or just like, in Portuguese, we say jogo de cintura, which just means, you know, being able to navigate complicated situations in a very graceful way, or in a very, I'm missing the word. It's hard to translate idiomism sometimes. But yeah, I would say that jogo de cintura is just, you know, people who navigate very complex situations and remain kind and remain graceful. One thing that I was so excited to find, not to find, really, just to acknowledge and to come to a deeper understanding of how that happens, was just how they were good at reconnecting the dots that were disconnected by colonialism. And that looked like many things in their activism, right? Like it looked like recovering language. It looked like telling the truth about Brazilian history and our not so distant past of colonization and so on.
There's a bit of a through line in the master's work you did and your current work, and that both seem very interested or focused on forms of Indigenous resilience almost. Why is that an area of interest for you?
There's no simple answer to that, but I've thought about it a little bit. Being a settler, I'm also very much white when it comes to Brazilian context. And I grew up in a very small town, and being queer, understanding myself as non-binary when I immigrated to North America, I think I kind of gravitate towards Indigenous ways or Indigenous knowledges and ways of understanding the world because it feels very good. It just feels healing. I always think about the first time that I heard about Two-Spirit people, for instance, was on campus. And being of Portuguese and Spanish ancestry, my ancestors didn't have a good positive narrative about who I am. I couldn't find that comfort, right, in my own background, in my own culture. And I was on campus and listening to a talk by Jack Saddleback, who was an awesome individual, an awesome person. And he told the group about how Two-Spirit people had a place and they were considered gifted. And they were, you know, there were so many roles that varied, of course, according to each community. But, you know, they could be ambassadors. They could be medicine people. Sometimes they would step in as caregivers for the children who were orphaned by wars and stuff. So it was the first time in my life that I heard something good about being queer, and that we've been here for a long time as queer people. And I find that the work that I do at AFCS with the Aboriginal Friendship Centers of Saskatchewan, it allows me as a settler person to be kind of a little bit of a bridge and support those people, those folks who are doing very good, amazing work and reconnecting those dots and repairing those relationships between Indigenous folks and culture and Two-Spirit narratives. Or when we think of gender, you know, everybody had a place, men, women, Two-Spirit. There was so much more flexibility in ways of being. And of course, that was taken away by colonialism. And there's no going back. But I think we can always go back to the narratives and celebrate that there are other ways of existing in this world, kind of.
That's just like a really beautiful way of embodying that idea of extending solidarity, is like seeking points of recognition or familiarity in other experiences and using that to extend your experiences to reach out to other people. So what kind of, can you tell us about the kind of work that you do now with the Aboriginal Friendship Centers of Saskatchewan?
For sure. So there are two main projects that I'm mostly involved with. The first one is in its third year, and it's called Honoring Her Spark. And the Honoring Her Spark project is focused on improving the economic landscape for Indigenous women and for Two-Spirit folks in Saskatchewan. And so the way that it was done, I wasn't here for that, but my colleagues at the center conducted, you know, community engagements and research to understand what were the needs and the barriers that Indigenous women and Two-Spirit folks were experiencing to access or to achieve economic prosperity. I don't know how to phrase that. But when you look at the document, there's a beautiful, beautiful document called Honoring Her Spark, a Saskatchewan Indigenous Women's Economic Framework. It lays out very clear, like, what were the needs and what were the barriers identified by community. And every time AFCS does research, we go through our partnership with the Friendship Centers. And we have 10 Friendship Centers across the province, soon to be 11. We have La Loche Friendship Center, Buffalo Narrows Friendship Center, Isle La Crosse, Kicknack, which is in L'Orange, Northwest Friendship Center, and that's in Meadow Lake. We have Battle Fords Indian and Métis Friendship Center, Prince Albert Indian and Métis Friendship Center, the Saskatoon Friendship Center as well, Neo Yotna in Regina, and the Capel Valley. And we're working to get Yorkton back. And they're coming back with programs and services soon, and then we'll be officially 11. And so we travel and we connect with the communities, because our friendship centers are very connected with the communities. You know, they're the ones doing the frontline work and offering programs and services and all kinds of very important things that urban Indigenous people need in order to have their needs met. So that's how we do research from AFCS. And that was done for Honoring Her Spark.
I would love to hear more about the Honoring Her Spark project.
Yeah, so one of the results of that project was the Saskatchewan Indigenous Women's Economic Framework, which is a very like step-by-step on how to support economic prosperity for Indigenous women and Two-Spirit folks in Saskatchewan. And what I like about the document as well is that it lays out a very like clear plan regardless of who you are or where you're coming from. You can approach this document, you know, as an Indigenous woman, of course, or as a tentative ally or ally to be, or as an organization, as a government body, really like any person that wishes to do something about it can take this document and read it and follow the suggestions that were laid out by Indigenous women and Two-Spirit folks in Saskatchewan. And what we've done with this as AFCS is that we created my colleague, who's the author of this document, Alicia Buckley. She created Honoring Her Spark Policy Development Workshop, and it had its pilot phase. We did workshops with 10 organizations, and then the workshop went through an evaluation phase, and now the workshop is called Honoring Her Spark Organization Insights Workshop. Because we realized that it was much more than policy that was going to be changed. There was a lot of talk around culture and around procedures and so many other aspects of how an organization exists and treats its people and the folks that they're hoping to serve. So that was one of the things. Another aspect of Honoring Her Spark is also awareness campaigns and supporting, you know, making sure that families and folks affected by the MMYWG2S crisis are being supported in the right way. And so there's a lot of work around that as well. And I think the reason why I wanted to talk about both Honoring Her Spark and the Safe Space Strategy is that safety, when Alicia was engaging with community back in 2018, safety was a big thing. Throughout all friendship centers, all the communities that they visited, safety kept coming up for Indigenous folks, especially women, especially Two-Spirit. And so the Safe Space Strategy, we consider it a project that is very much a relative to Honoring Her Spark. They're very much connected, and it's still in its initial phases. We also went back to the community because it had been a good 5 years. So we went back to the communities and we connected again, this time asking specifically about safety and what people understood by safe. What is a safe space? Each person will have a different answer to that, even in a different day. They will define it differently. So it's a tough it's a tough term to define.
Yeah, I imagine it must be.
We're analyzing the data now. And by data, that's the colonial word, but really it's just the stories, right? We collected stories, and throughout the project, as it was done with Honoring Her Spark, our job now as AFCS is to honor and respect and promote those stories in a way that is productive and that actually increases safer spaces for Two-Spirit and Indigenous women. And the Safe Space Strategy project, much like Honoring Her Spark, is a way we want to address, we want to increase our ability to address gender-based violence. And so we're hoping, I'm hoping that at the end, when I'm done analyzing all the information and the stories that we collected, that we can create a document that will work very much to be on the table of the service providers, right? The frontline staff at each friendship center. So they can go to for ideas on which programs or which initiatives I can throw together for Two-Spirit folks in my community. How can I support Two-Spirit youth in Saskatchewan? Like a big problem for one person to solve by themselves. So I'm hoping that this document will continue to connect ideas across the province and put the friendship centers in dialogue with each other. Another part of both this project is that we have, and mostly from the Honoring Her Spark program, we have a Friendship Center Women's Network, and that's composed of one staff at each Friendship Center that leads programming for Indigenous women and for Two-Spirit folks. And so we meet monthly, oftentimes on Zoom, unfortunately, but once or twice a year, we try to meet in person. That's when we get some capacity building and training on how to improve ourselves to better serve these communities. And a few examples, I guess one example of recent training that we received in partnership with Out Saskatoon, we were trained on how to deliver the gender-based violence on a 101. And that was a good start. I think there is lots to be done when it comes to supporting Two-Spirit youth and Two-Spirit people of all ages, of course.
I think that probably one of the bigger challenges that people sometimes encounter when they first become a student or they first like start dipping their toes into research or academia is finding a way to make that jump from theoretical to practicals. Like you do a lot of study, you spend a lot of time in classrooms, and you really like immerse yourself in these ideas and you develop your own ideas and you do so much thinking. And it can sometimes be kind of challenging to find a way to take it into the real world and to actually like bring it into concrete spaces and manifest in concrete ways that have a meaningful impact on people. But it sounds like the work that you're doing now is a really good example of how you can make that bridge from what you might be doing in the university to what you're doing out in the communities with other people. And it's just, it's nice to hear that you've made that connection, because I know that sometimes for people, like they kind of hit a roadblock. They're like, okay, how can I use this? What can I do with this? But it sounds like some really powerful stuff is coming out of the projects that you're involved with. So it's great to hear about that. Now, because so much of the work is interested in Indigenous people, in Two-Spirit youth, then the answer is probably going to be most of it. But one of the questions we ask is there anything in your work that you feel is important for others to be aware of that maybe doesn't get as much attention as it should? Are there any like specific points that you wish more people knew about or more people would ask about?
Yeah, I think because, you know, I'm a newcomer, so I didn't know much community movement-wise because I wasn't from here. Mm-hmm. But still, I was very surprised when I started working at AFCS and understanding the Friendship Center movement in Saskatchewan and what they've been doing to support urban Indigenous folks for decades. I was surprised that I never heard of Friendship Centers. I think they do so much and they address and support their communities in ways that I wish was more out there for the world. For example, I just heard actually part of one of my colleagues just shared that because Honoring Her Spark started the talk around, you know, economic prosperity and Indigenous women, a lot has been happening Friendship Center wise in supporting Indigenous women. And I recently heard that in Isle La Crosse, the Friendship Center now has its own medicine shop, like traditional medicine, that they are so proud of and that they are very respectful of the ways on how to treat the earth and the gifts that it gives us. And it just makes so much sense, right? We also have Neo-Yotna in Regina, Neo-Yotna Friendship Center, that has been doing very good work towards harm reduction, for instance, and also just language recovery. They also have a weekly Two Spirit group that meets every week for I don't know how many years, which is impressive, right? They're doing so much. Another example that I'm very proud of, I'll just keep talking about the Friendship Centers, is that North Battleford, for Battleford's Indian and Métis Friendship Center, they had trouble for a little bit finding an elder who could support this project, but they finally did found someone who would help them build a sweat, an urban sweat, which was why it was hard to find an elder to guide the project, but they finally did it. And now they have big plans about how they're gonna, you know, make sure to reconnect folks with culture and ceremony in a meaningful way and make a sweat for mourning mothers or make a sweat for Two Spirit folks who are often denied access to ceremony. And so, you know, throughout the province, all of the Friendship Centers are doing that work of repairing these connections of that was denied to Indigenous folks with their culture and who they are and their languages. And it's very precious. I feel very happy to support that kind of work in whatever way I can.
So if there is something that you would want people to pay more attention to, it would be the work that's already taking place at places like the Friendship Centers.
Yeah, support your Friendship Center, visit your Friendship Center, go have tea with the elder, you know, go play bingo and hang out. Be friends with the Friendship Center.
So we do usually try to close episodes with messages for service providers so that they can take them with them going forward. So based on your research and your experiences with the AFCS, if you were to give service providers a specific practice to work towards in the long term or something simple that they could start doing right now, what would that be?
If I'm thinking service providers in the larger sense and not particularly Indigenous people, I would say, you know, when we talk about reconciliation and we read calls to action and the calls for justice, I think that mainstream or settler folks get a little bit intimidated, but really it's just as simple as loving each other and taking care of each other. And all of us know how to do that in different ways. So I encourage people to, you know, play at your strengths and how you can take care of one another the best way that you know yourself to do. And, you know, thinking of service providers from my work, I am just a message of, I see the work that you're doing and I'm very proud to be a part of the movement and I'm just excited to keep seeing it happen. I don't know, keep seeing the action. So,
well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today, Morgana. So thank you so much for joining us. And I'm sure we're all going to do our best to reach out to our local Friendship Centers based on what you've been talking about here, because a lot of exciting work taking place. And if people aren't already feeling motivated, I'm sure after listening to this episode, they're going to feel motivated to go out and play bingo and make friends and have tea and do all the stuff you were talking about. I hope people feel inspired to try connecting.
Yes, that would be awesome. Thank you for having me, Shailene. It's been great.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Resolving Violence. If you're interested in learning more about today's guests and their research or Resolve Saskatchewan, please check the show notes below. And if what you listened to today was helpful, please consider sharing it with colleagues and on social media so we can work collectively to resolve violence. Thanks again. Until next time.